ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
There's a lot of bad stuff happening in the world. We read it every day. This is something good. We're trying to keep people alive. So it does give me a strong purpose.
Neil Danaher. And he talks about purpose there pretty casually. Well, on Monday, when as many as 90,000 people pack into the MCG, it will be emotional. There'll be a game of footy, yeah, between King's Birthday, Combatants, Collingwood and Melbourne. There'll be the big freeze, of course. A crowd blanketed in blue beanies as big names go down the slide and into a giant ice bath, raising hundreds of thousands, if not millions, in the process. There'll be the continuation of immense purpose. Can you imagine the atmosphere of celebration around what this man has done on Monday? Today, we're talking about Neil Danaher with someone who knew him so well. I'm Patrick Stack. This is ABC Sport Daily. Mike Sheen is a legendary footy journo. He was chief writer for the Herald Sun for so many years. He's a Melbourne Footy Club person. Few better to talk about Neil Danaher and legacy. Mike, I just wanted to go back to maybe your earliest interactions with Neil as we sort of work our way towards the King's Birthday clash on Monday at the MCG. What stands out to you from your earliest interactions?
Well, Patrick, my earliest memory of my engagements with Neil was the night of the 1983 Grand Final when the Bombers had been smashed by Hawthorn. The Essendon had their Grand Final dinner at the Southern Cross Hotel in Melbourne. And I found myself alongside Neil late at night, and Neil asking me who I would sack from the list and who we should keep. And I felt very flattered that this bloke, this young gun who had been appointed Essendon captain, was asking my advice about who the Bombers should keep. And in typical journalistic fashion, I sacked about 15 that night. So we talked then, and that was when I sort of first had the impression of Neil for what he is. And I always found Neil to be feisty and stubborn, but very engaging company.
Can I do this? I look at you and go, that's a stupid question.
I mean, there's a couple of contradictions in there, but that was the Neil that I knew then, and the Neil that I knew all the way through for probably the 40 years that we were, and I think we can loosely say we were mates.
It's funny that you talk about the sharp tongue, because that seems to be a common theme that I hear through a lot of recollections. Was there a moment where you found yourself on the wrong side of him and on the wrong side of that sharp tongue?
Yeah, there were several, I think. I think that comes with the territory too. I was chief football writer of a major paper in Melbourne. You do get into a situation where you say things about a bloke and his football team, and that can bring you some concerns, and they did with Neil. I mean, he was never nasty, but he was very happy to sort of set you straight if there was an area in which he thought that you were in the wrong.
It's funny because for all he achieved as a person, I think at times we can sort of forget him as a player or minimise what he did as a player, maybe even borderline underappreciated at this point because of the sheer scope of what he achieved after he finished playing. How do you remember him as a footballer, Mike?
That's a very good question, and it doesn't get asked often enough about Neil. I mean, he was an outstanding player. When you're made captain of an AFL club at 21 years of age, it just shows what your footy club thinks of you. Very good over his head, very competent in all the spheres of the game, brave, and could kick a goal when he had to. There was nothing that he didn't have. I mean, I know Kevin Sheedy was a massive fan of his football talent, and it's just sad that he only played, I think, 70 or 80 games in his career because of his knee problems.
Tragically, there were knee reconstruction, and, you know, he made the comeback but was never again the player that he once was. So we should never forget how good a footballer he was going to be.
I think Sheedy has likened him, and he would say that he would regard Neil as the same level as James Hird. And we know what the Eston people think of Hurdy. So that's the ultimate accolade, I reckon, from a coach.
He made the transition into coaching. And I heard Gary Lyon speak in recent days about how he changed the approach to footy as a coach, driving standards and professionalism, notorious, as I say, for that forthright manner. How did you see him as a coach when he made that transition?
No, he's an excellent coach, and you can tell when the tributes come in. I mean, we all tend to find nice things to say about people when they die, but the Melbourne blokes, he meant far more to the Melbourne blokes than that. I mean, they really revered him because he was tough on them, but he was also fair, and he was also so important in their development as individuals in the community too. So he made sure that the standards were high and that the players knew what they had to do to be part of his teams.
He goes, we're clearly the worst team. We're the worst team in the competition. He had this stupid laugh on his face. Everyone knows that. So we're going to get to work and we're going to work harder than anyone has.
And the teams were very good. I mean, the best result he had was the 2000 grand final, when Essendon beat Melbourne and beat them convincingly. But that was a very good performance by the coach and the players at that time, given the talent at their disposal.
The motor neuron diagnosis, it's been a decade plus since that time.
I didn't know what it was, you know. So it was talked about in hushed tones. I come over to Melbourne and the specialist said, sorry, you got MND. I started to think, well, what's that mean? It started to dawn on me what it meant.
What do you remember of when you heard that Neil Danaher had been diagnosed with MND?
Well, Patrick, none of us understood, I think in the general community, very few of us understood what motor neuron disease was. And I remember at the time sort of thinking, well, this is obviously pretty serious because of what people were saying around it. But I didn't know that it was terminal and that there was no recovery from it. And I think his ability to fight like he did for all that time, for 13 years, was staggering. So, as I said, I don't believe that we understood what it meant at the time, but we came accustomed to it. And I think I love the fact, as so many people do, that he treated it as the beast.
I call it the beast. I personalise it because then I can fight it. It's the beast way. It does kill you.
But he wasn't prepared to roll over and just concede and know that it was ultimately going to claim him. And his ability to withstand that.
He always said that attitude is a choice, and no matter what is thrown your way, it's up to you and how you respond.
He lived by that mantra that life's not fair. Sometimes you sent these hurdles and you've just got to jump them and do your best you can.
Yeah, to meet the grim challenge the way he did. I mean, there's really, it's hard to find words that do it justice. Was there anything that stood out to you privately or even publicly from the last decade plus as someone who, you know, would consider him a mate that maybe just epitomises or underlines that?
Well, I think the way he tended to the big freeze was the thing that would be enduring for me.
I would love to see the MCG just turn absolutely blue and be able to look around and do Dad proud. And, I mean, that's what the community has done for 12 years. As Dad said, we thought we were going to do some chook raffles and, you know, try and make a difference.
I mean, it was his creation, and it was just this thing that he used to say, I'm not going to concede to this. I'm just going to this will be the example of where all these people that are in my orbit we'll come together and we'll make this statement about MND and that we're prepared to take it head on and hopefully get the money to produce the research that will ultimately lead to a cure. Now, we haven't done that yet, but to make $100 million in excess of that from the appeals that we've had just shows how committed he was to the cause. And he never wavered in that. There was never any woe is me and feel sorry for me. He was just so keen to fight the fight that's where it's taken us to this point now. And I think just the outpouring of emotion last week, particularly in Melbourne, was amazing, really, just to show what people thought of the fight that he'd put up for so long, because the expectation initially was that he would live for maybe 2 years, and he just refused to concede to that.
His daughter, Beck, spoke with typical grace during the week. Mike, you're a grandfather. Beck spoke of wanting her father, Neil, to meet her child.
Yeah, no, I've got a baby due in 2 weeks. So I thought Dad was going to meet him, a little boy I've got coming. So he got close. He got very close to meeting him.
Did that sort of hit hard?
Well, yeah, no, the Danaher girls have been, well, the whole family has. I know Ben, the son, and Beck has been the spearhead of the campaign along with Jan, his wife. I mean, they've been astounding to me with their willingness to do all the things that they've done, given that their father's virtually dying in front of them.
you summed it up beautifully about the emotion coursing through Melbourne in recent weeks. On Monday, NRL star Jai Arrow is going to toss the coin. The emotion is going to be on another level because you're going to have 90,000 plus there to celebrate what has been an incredible life. I assume that you'll be in attendance. Just how special is that going to be?
Well, it is going to be amazing. And I'm talking about the NRL player. I don't follow NRL. But I felt so sad the other day, given what I'd learnt during the Niels episode, to hear that this guy had MND, and he's in his 40s, isn't he?
Yeah, 30s. He's 30 years of age.
Is that all he is? And all of us now feel that we're so much better acquainted with MND, and to hear that about him, I just felt so sad to think that what it means for his life. And, you know, at best, I mean, Neil has survived longer than anyone with this illness, as I understand it.
There's no treatment. There's no cure. It'll try and kill me slowly. Yep, the worst is yet to come. It may get me, but this campaign will get it.
And that's 13 years, so that takes this guy into his mid-40s. And I mean, to think that your life can be cut short like that is just so sad for me.
We'll try to finish on an upbeat note, and I want to ask maybe one-liners or mantras. Someone who's probably heard, you've probably forgotten more than even are out there that you've heard from Neil Danaher over the journey, Mike. But if you have one to draw into, a one-liner or a mantra, a Neilism, what would it be?
Well, the one that encapsulates Neil's fight with me is that when it's all said and done, there's much more said than is done.
2017, the quote that he left the group with before we went out to play was, when all is said and done, more is said than done. And the mark of a person is not what you say, it's what you do. And then he eyeballed us and he goes, so what are you going to do? And it's just like right then you just want to run through a brick wall.
And I mean, just this saying to us, just do things. Don't wait. Don't lament the plight that you've got that's fallen in front of you. Just get on with it and make the most of what you've got. And I think he would say, I think he's in his final moments, he would think that he's had a good life. That was the way he always looked at it. I'm not sure I'd be that brave. I don't think that I could see myself being as positive as Neil was. And he's got a beautiful family.
We never really understood or comprehended how far Dad's reach was and the impact that he had. So hearing words from so many individuals and seeing the footage of Dad has been really powerful to, in some ways, just remember him across the journey. And I said it's really humbling to see what people have rallied behind us over the last week.
He's played football, he's coached football, he's lived a life. I think that he would certainly wish for a few other things, like on the health front. I mean, even back to his playing career, to have three major knee operations, which virtually cruel his career, and then to suffer motor neurone, it's just shows that's more than his share. There's no question about that. But he lived the brave life. There's nothing that's not authentic about Neil, and we'll see that next Wednesday at the funeral when there'll be, I would think there'd be nearly a grand final size crowd at the state funeral.
This campaign's been terrific because the beast has been brought out of the cave. People have been made aware of what it does to people. And people care, and when people care, things get done. It may not help me, but the beast will be beaten.
It's hard to think of a bigger legacy in Australian rules football, let alone sport in this country. Mike Sheehan, thanks so much for sharing your recollections. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Patrick.
That's all we've got for you today. Just a reminder, keep your eyes and ears on this feed early next week. We've got some news. It's coming. Things are going to look a little bit different going forward. We're excited to get you across it. I'm Patrick Stack. This episode was produced by Declan Byrne. Thanks to Fox Sports for the extra audio used in this episode. Catch you soon.